Hello, everyone, and welcome into Young Lads, episode 32. Harris Eisenberg joining me, Peter DeFee Jr., as always, on this beautiful, as we are recording this Friday afternoon. It is officially March, which means that MLB baseball regular season is just around the corner. We are 27 days away from regular season. Most importantly, I don't know about you, Harris, but it means that we're getting ready for March Madness. And in about 2 or 3 weeks or so, we're getting into the best time of the year where MLB season's about to start. We got March Madness and everything going on. So pretty good part of the schedule for sports. We got college baseball ramping up with conference getting started later this month. So pretty good month to be a sports fan, I should say so.
Yeah, I set aside about $60 earlier today just so I have it for my upcoming brackets. Hit a big parlay last night, so that helps. But anyways, yeah, you know, we got baseball, March Madness, which I actually got to experience in person for the first time last year, which was pretty neat. So yeah, I mean, it's so funny. You know, I saw a TikTok today. It's impossible to know enough about the 64 teams that are going to be in it in order to make the perfect bracket. It's not possible.
No, because you think you know everything, and then Lehigh Valley upsets Duke.
Exactly.
And you're just like, okay. Or UMBC upsets Virginia.
You know, we could be seeing the High Point Panthers this year as a big number 15 or 14 seed. They could be out to upset somebody. Just alerting
just
you right
say,
now.
Didn't both the men's and women's High Point teams win the regular season for their conference?
Shout out to the Thurs. Yes, girls and boys won the conference. Girls, not surprised. You know, they always seem to be at the top. But the guys, you know, with a first-year head coach, I mean, it's electric down there at the QC. It's phenomenal. So I'm going to try and make it to the tournament. They're actually hosting their conference tournament next week. I'll say game time decision on that. But, yeah, happy for the good old alma mater.
So now how many wins do they need to win the championship? Like how many – being in a one seed, how many games do you have to go through? Because I know
so,
you're going to get a first round bye.
Yeah, so the conference is obviously a little bit smaller than some of the rest of the conferences. So they'll end up playing starting on Friday of next week, and they'll end up playing Saturday if they win. And then if they win on Saturday, they'll play on Sunday, and then that's it.
Oh, so
that's,
only three
that's,
games.
That's tougher than people think. You know, back-to-back games, to-back games, I should say. Three games in a row. It's not easy. You know, the girls are a little banged up, but they were undefeated in February. So, you know, we'll see. I'm excited.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a conference that they have to win their conference championship.
Yes.
So,
24
that's a smaller
and six.
Conference.
24 and 6 or 7 or whatever it is probably not going to be good enough if you don't win the actual championship.
And remind me real quick before we go on to some baseball news. What conference are they in?
They are in the Big South Conference. And speaking of the Big South Conference... the Presbyterian Blue Hose did not beat the Clemson Tigers last week. But it was Kennesaw State whose football team is in the Big South that ended up beating Clemson by a score of 18-1 last week. So I was wrong, but Kennesaw State kind of made up for it.
Well, you were wrong on the team that was going to beat them.
Yes.
You were right on Clemson getting upset. You were just wrong on. We had a lot of upsets last week. Stetson beat Florida 7-4 at Stetson. We did not see. We can kind of go through some of the midweeks real quick, too. Because really the only MLB news that we have is Cody Bellinger signed back with the Cubs. 3 years, $80 million. So about 26, almost $27 million per year. Harris, you had him going back to the Cubs. I know you said you. I think you said. 4 years, $90 million though. I had him going to the Yankees for 5 years and $125 million, which was $25 million per year. So you were the closest to the team. I was the closest to the actual pay that he was going to get, I think. Because what's $90 million divided by 4 years is what? 22.5. So yeah. So I was closer to pay. You were obviously right on the mark with him going back to the Cubs. So, we tried to talk about this on Wednesday, but Riverside kind of was not being nice to us, knock on wood that, you know, it's going to be nicer today. but it gives them some stability in the in that offense. They added Michael Bush this year. Christopher Morrell's looking to take a step forward. You have Yan Gomes behind the plate now with you. Still got Dansby Swanson. Ian Happ is still there. Michael Bush comes over to be that first baseman. You still have Patrick Wisdom, who is going to be like a utility guy, Nick Madrigal. It's all going to be about that starting rotation. You know, I'm not even going to try to say his last name, but Shota, who came over from Japan, is probably going to be your two behind Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks will probably get your opening day start.
Well, you get Justin Steele in there, too.
Or Justin Steele.
Ace rookie.
So had a really good rookie year. But I think they're going to miss having Marcus Stroman there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we tried to talk about it on Wednesday, too. Stroman's a big loss. I mean, that was undoubtedly, even with Steele last year, Stroman was still the number one on that staff. I mean, he was pitching some good baseball, especially in the first half of the year. But yeah, bringing back Bellinger, I think, was obviously the right thing to do and the right thing for Bellinger because, look, it was his first good year in 4 years since he won the MVP. Another team would have been really dumb to go out there and give him close to $100 million. So I think both sides win on this one. Bellinger gets to stay in a place where he had his best year in 4 years, and the Cubs get him on a lower value because Boris had him kind of wait for a little while. We don't really know what the market was. I was assuming that it would have been, you know, a high premium in the offseason. But, yeah, here we are. Good deal for both sides. The Cubs absolutely needed it because I think without Bellinger, I mean, this team would have been nowhere near what they were last year.
Yeah, because if he can even just do 75% of what he did, because he hit over 300 last year, I think 305. If he can just hit 280 with 20 home runs and drive in 80 RBIs in the third through the fifth spot, depending on wherever they put him, and play a Gold Glove center field, which he can, you're looking at a team that can at least contend, if not for the Central, at least for a wild card spot, because the Central is a little, it's not as weak as the American League Central, but it's still weak to the point where the Reds were in first place last year for a little bit. The Pirates were in first place for a little bit. The Brewers ultimately ended up winning that division, but they only won it with 92 games. The Cardinals had a down year. Are they going to bounce back, you know, with the pitching acquisitions that they made this offseason? So it's kind of a division that if you can win 85 to 88 games, you could potentially win that division. So adding somebody in that offense like Bellinger, or I should say just keeping somebody in that offense like Bellinger, I think is really going to help. Again, pitching, though, is going to see what it's going to be because you got Jordan Wicks and Justin Steele, two guys coming off of really good rookie years. But what are they going to do their sophomore season? Shota, what is he going to do from Japan? Kyle Hendricks is getting up there in age. You know, he had a sub 4 ERA last year, but was under 500, didn't make all 30 starts or so. I think he made 25 or 26. I should have looked it up really quick. And then Jameson Taillon is the other guy that has had really a season and a half of good baseball and nothing else. So that starting rotation is going to miss Stroman, like you said. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they go out either before the season starts or, you know, at the trade deadline, if they're somewhat in it, if they don't try to make a big splash and maybe even try to bring in Jordan Montgomery. Montgomery's still out there. Yeah. Blake Snell is still out there. I don't know how much money they have to spend or they want to spend, but if you can get somebody like a Montgomery who is going to be your quote unquote ace of the staff because you're going to pay him big money to be your ace, but he's going to fit in perfectly with Kyle Hendricks and Shota, and you can move all those guys down a spot and have a really solid rotation. Montgomery can kind of be like your John Lester when they signed him in 2015 and help him get to the playoffs, and then you add the pieces around him, and next thing you know, you're fighting for a World Series spot.
Yeah, I think that's a guy, too, that's familiar with the division. You know, he knows what it's like. In my opinion, just going back to Bellinger to try and make a comparison here, I really felt that Bellinger would have been a good fit for the Cardinals this year if the Cubs weren't able to sign him. And we know the history of the Cardinals stealing some Cubs away and vice versa. So, yeah, I agree with you. The Cubs are definitely at least one pitcher away, probably two, in order to compete. But who knows? I think the Brewers are going to take a step back this year. You know, Pittsburgh, I don't think, has a sustained roster enough to compete like they did in the first 2 months of the year last year, although they did get O'Neill Cruz back from injury. I'm sure the Reds will be really good and a big threat. So, yeah, it could turn into the AL Central, the National League, with how tight and how poorly the division is.
Yeah, and speaking of the Pirates, I don't know if you saw yesterday, and it was a shame it wasn't televised, but Paul Skeens faced the Baltimore Orioles, and you had four of the last five number one picks in that game. You had Paul Skeens on the mound, Henry Davis behind the plate, and then you had Adley Rutschman behind the plate, and Jackson Holliday playing second base right now. Orioles just signed somebody. I forgot who they – oh, Colton Wong.
They just signed Colton Wong.
They just signed Colton Wong. Probably going to be a depth piece, maybe somebody that can come off the bench for you as a left-handed bat. But, I mean, it's such a shame that MLB did not have that televised, because you're talking about four of the next young stars to come up. Paul Skeens could possibly break camp with Pittsburgh Pirates this year and be – I don't think he's going to be their opening day starter, but could be their number two or three starter this year behind Mitch Keller, who just signed a five-year, $77 million contract extension with them. But I think MLB does such a poor job of marketing these young guys. Like, that should have been on MLB Network, or it should have been on ESPN. And even if you just, on MLB Network, show the first couple of innings that Paul Skeens is going to face these guys and then go to another game that you want to show. I mean, but it's such a shame that that wasn't on last night, because watching Skeens throw 102 and then 88 in back-to-back pitches to Jackson Holliday was just unfair.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think with the big leagues and ESPN, they want to showcase the big established stars already. And I think one of the problems with Major League Baseball is that they don't showcase their future enough. You get the futures game, and that's about it. So, whoever covered it, by the way, I thought did a great job, because, I mean, we had videos left and right on Twitter. So shout out to whoever was or X, whatever the hell you want to call it, covering that. But, yeah, that was a primetime matchup that I was really looking forward to. Skeens, from all the reports, says, you know, he looks pretty good in camp. I could definitely see him cracking the club when the season starts. I mean, that was a guy who everyone talked about last year at LSU being big league ready at that point.
Yeah, and I'm trying to real quick look to see what their rotation options are, if my at-bat app will load. Speaking of the Pirates, they're playing the Rays right now, actually. They're winning 4-3 as we speak. Let's see. Efforting on my end. Pittsburgh. All right, so rotation options right now. You have David Bednar is going to be in the back end of the bullpen, obviously. I forgot that they got Aroldis Chapman this year. Bailey Falter, maybe, maybe not. They got him from Philadelphia. Josh Fleming signed over there. Marco Gonzalez, who used to be with the Mariners and the Cardinals, I believe. I know he's with the Mariners for sure. Mitch Keller, who I just said. Then you have Quinn Priester, who's only 23 years old. I don't think he's going to break camp with them. I know he kind of struggled last year when he was up in the club. Are you hearing that, Harris? Is that me? Here we go. Okay, there we go. Sorry, I was hearing something in my ears. Last year, Priester, in 8 games started, had a 7.74 ERA, so... I don't imagine him breaking camp with the club. Josh Fleming is terrible. I'm glad he's off the Rays. So you have a good shot of him being your number two behind Mitch Keller.
Yeah, and just the velocity. Like, we were all fantasizing last year. It's like, oh, well, if the Pirates were to make some sort of run in August, Skeens would come up in September and just, like, you know, propel them to the playoffs. We were all fantasizing and hoping that would happen. It didn't happen, probably for the better. But, yeah, I mean, that kid... He's definitely ready to go. There is nothing that makes me think that he'd be phased by it. He'll probably start, honestly. You know, he only had 2 appearances at Double A. The first one, he didn't even get out of the first inning. And so maybe he'll start the year, maybe in the minors, but he'll be a full-time big leaguer probably by midseason.
Yeah, and the only reason he would start in the minor leagues is if the Pirates were trying to do what the Cubs did to Chris Bryant and just keep him down there for 2 weeks to say, oh, he needs to work on his slider some more. And then 2 weeks after that, bring him up so they have an extra year of team control, which really, if he finishes top, I believe if he finishes top five in Rookie of the Year voting, he gets that service time back anyways. So I don't know how much teams are going to do that now. But yeah, I mean, he's got a very good possibility, like you said, of breaking camp. And I think that'd be an interesting thing to watch for, just because he is so major league ready. Him and Priester, if they could be able to come up and have Mitch Keller, that's a really good 1-2-3 in the rotation, and that could vie for a central title. I don't think this year, like you said, I think they're going to take a step back. I think the Reds are somebody to watch out for in that division, but they could be a dark horse for a potential wild card spot, if not make the end of the season fun to watch and kind of upset some teams later on in the season.
That's all we ask for.
So that's really all of the MLB news that we need to talk about, or we had to talk about. Other than that, Blake Snell still unsigned, Jordan Montgomery still unsigned, Matt Chapman still unsigned. Anybody else big that's still unsigned? Is Julio Urias still unsigned?
Who's going to sign that guy?
I know. I was just like, that just came to the back of my mind, though. Like, he's not signed, and I'm wondering who's going to sign him. So, anyways, on to some college baseball, unless you have anything to add, Harris.
I am all good. I mean, I was just watching NC State and Towson before we got on here, and it was a pretty tight game. The Wolfpack were winning 4-2. Luckily today, because we're recording on a Friday, there's some bad weather on the East Coast, so a lot of those games have been washed out. So gives us a little bit of time to preview some series here. But anyways, back to NC State. Sam Heifel, another good start, 5 innings back in the rotation. Probably the biggest – this is like a rivalry weekend for college baseball coming up, because we got UCF and USF this weekend. We got Florida and I believe – aren't they playing Florida State this weekend?
No, Florida State's playing Illinois, and that game just got postponed.
Okay. I know Florida's playing Florida's playing Miami. And then yep. We have
who just lost to FGCU the other day.
That's too. Right. That's right. Florida Gulf Coast. Shout out the big matchup though. We got Georgia Tech and Georgia. It features the top two teams in the country when it comes to home runs and the top two players in the league when it comes to hitting long balls. That is Drew Burris and Charlie Condon, who, by the way, Charlie Condon's literally all that Georgia has. But probably the big story was Drew Burris hitting those four homers for Georgia Tech on Tuesday in their win. So, yeah, he leads the nation now with 9 homers. And if you think about it, we haven't even played 10 games yet, and he's got 9 home runs. So, huge feat there, hitting 4 homers in a game.
He just passed Tommy White for the most home runs in 9 games, did he not? Because
yes,
Tommy
yes,
White
he did
8 home runs in 9 games. Drew Burris hit 9 in 9 games. So I believe he just passed Tommy White. I believe that's what Tommy White did. But
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, that dude is mashing. And you see some of the home runs that he hit on Tuesday. Who did they play Tuesday? They just played a mid-major team. Who did they play Tuesday? Georgia Tech played Georgia State.
There you go.
10-0, and he was responsible, I believe, for 6 of those 10 runs. So, I mean, yeah, just absolute monster right now from Drew Burris. I think you talked about him earlier in the year, did you not? Didn't you talk about him being one to watch for in that leadoff spot?
I think he'll probably be the saving grace of that team, because if you think about it, the ACC is so loaded. You almost forget that Georgia and Georgia Tech are even in the ACC baseball-wise. So you know, Georgia at least was at the very bottom of the barrel. Georgia's in the SEC. Sorry, Georgia Tech in the ACC. You almost forget that they're in the ACC because they really are bottom of the barrel when it comes to a lot of the other sports, but baseball specifically. Like, they had Chandler Simpson, who just got drafted by the Rays and led minor league baseball and still tied with Victor Scott, minor league stolen bases last year. So they got some dudes on that team, but Drew Burris is probably the focal point of that roster. So yeah, 9 homers. It's going to be a big series. And for a lot of these teams, it's going to come down to the pitching, man. You know, both those teams, Georgia Tech, they struggle with the on the mound. So I'm expecting slugfest here this weekend.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Georgia Tech the number one team in the country a couple of years ago? Two or 3 years ago, didn't they get as high as 1?
They might have.
I believe going into the tournament, they were a 1 seed and close to the number 1 or number 2 overall seed for the tournament. I believe that would have been 2019, maybe 2021. Either year before COVID or the year after.
Might have been 19. Because 2022, they played they weren't hosting their regional and they lost. Just from what I remember.
Yeah, I think it was the year before COVID. I think it was 2019. They hosted their regional, went to a super, and lost the supers.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. But Georgia Tech, last year was sneaky. I mean, they were top 3 in the ACC in batting average and on base percentage. And then basically the write-up on them this year is that their success is just like far from guaranteed because of how loaded the conference is. I mean, we talked about Wake Forest, but Duke. Duke is undefeated. They're 8-0. Virginia's also 8-0. And I think a lot of people sleep on Virginia, too, just because Wake Forest is now the number one team in the land. But Virginia led the league, or the nation last year, in team ERA. So, they're no joke. Florida State's undefeated as well, 7-0.
Yeah, listen, trust me. I was talking to you about it. They're going to rip my heart out.
Ride high.
For people that don't know, I'm a Florida State fan. And just real quick to finish the Georgia Tech, they were the number 3 overall seed in 2019. I believe they were number 1 in the country at one point. I know they hosted a regional. I'm just trying to find it real quick. Sorry.
Maybe CeCe Sabathia's kid can make a big impact on the roster this year because I know he's at Georgia Tech.
Really?
Yeah.
So Georgia Tech lost their regional. They hosted a regional. They lost to Auburn in the semis and the regional final. So Auburn ended up moving on, and that's when Auburn went to the College World Series. They beat North Carolina 2 out of 3. So that's pretty interesting, though. Where did CeCe go? CeCe was right out of high school, right?
Yeah.
When he went to Cleveland?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, one of the good matchups, another good matchup, Liberty and Coastal, it actually got postponed, so never mind. Can't be a good matchup because it's not going to be played. But a couple other ranked teams being played. You have Clemson and South Carolina, and then also Indiana and Alabama. So Alabama is 9-0, Clemson 7-1, South Carolina is 8-1. And then other than that, you have Texas at LSU. Number 15, Texas against number 3, LSU. I think a sneaky good matchup could be UConn and Auburn. I watched UConn when they were here in Tampa playing against USF, and their pitching staff did really well. They held USF. Now, granted, it's USF. Their offense hasn't really been hot, but they held them to 2 hits and 1 run, and the only run and one of the 2 hits was a home run. So their pitching staff's really good. They can also field it really well. So that could be an interesting, sneaky matchup. Iowa and Ole Miss. Iowa's kind of faltered since beginning of the season ranked. They're 4-4. Ole Miss, I mean, lost to High Point. You showed me that before.
Yeah, baby, the High Point Panthers.
Before absolutely just wiping the floor with them.
Yeah,
so,
they made them really mad. They made him really, really mad. It was a tough scene those last two games.
But other than that, I mean, you got 7-1 Utah, 7-1 Cal.
Duke just improved to 9-0. They just wrapped up. They shut out Akron. Duke just won. You want to hear this line from Jonathan Santucci on this rainy Friday afternoon? 6 innings.
Give it to me.
No earned runs. Obviously, Duke shut out Akron. 1 hit, 2 walks, 14 strikeouts for Mr. Santucci, who is bouncing back from injury after only appearing in 7 games last year. So, hey, you know, under the radar kind of guy if you're just getting into college baseball, but I saw this kid a couple years ago mow away High Point, and I knew the kid was legit. And, you know, here he is. He's had a great start to the year. So, kudos to him. 14 strikeouts. And Duke now 9-0.
And, who thought? North Carolina actually just wrapped up their win, too. They beat Princeton 12-2.
That's a series we weren't able to touch on last week. North Carolina and ECU was a hell of a series. Yeah. Especially the last game.
That had super regional vibes all over. I mean, I was telling you about it. I was working, that Sunday game. I was working the Lightning game, so I flipped it on. It was 4-0. I kind of watched a couple of minutes of it, and I was like, you know what? Let me flip back to the Florida State game. Florida State was wiping the floor with, I believe they were playing Western Carolina in that series. They were beating them like 12-2 or something. So I was like, you know what? I got to start my work, so let me just turn everything off. And then I was on Twitter during one of the intermissions, and all of a sudden, everything was just blowing up with Eastern Carolina and North Carolina. And by the time I turned it on, it was already over, and it was a really good game, back and forth. East Carolina was up 4-0 at one point. Then North Carolina made it 5-4. East Carolina came back and made it 6-5. And then it just kept going back and forth before the freshman walked it off. And super regional vibes all over the place. And
jungle was Carolina being the jungle. Baseball.
Carolina baseball is off to a fantastic start this year. South Carolina, North Carolina, Duke, Wake Forest, Campbell, East Carolina.
We got nine teams. We got 9 teams between those two states that are in the top 25 in the polls.
Coastal Carolina.
Don't forget the College of Charleston too. 7-1 with a team ERA of 2.22.
They actually play Nebraska tonight at 4:00. So, speaking of Carolina though, NC State up 5-4 on Townsend right now.
Townsend just scored a couple of runs in the eighth, and I think it's now the ninth inning. So, yeah, and I want to touch on NC State for a second because I think it would pain me to not bring it up this week. But Sam Heifel, you might remember him for going toe to toe with Jack Leiter in the College World Series in 2021 as a freshman, and then the next day, NC State only had 9 players, and he had to start at first base, and he went 3-for-4, and oh yeah, those hits came off a Kumar Rocker. But ever since 2021, this guy has dealt with a lot of injury and some inconsistency. Last year, he came out of the bullpen and only started 5 games. He started 2022 as the Friday night starter, had an ERA over 5, got hurt. Elliot Avin trusting Sam Heifel here to start on Friday nights again has paid off. Now, his outings have been up and down, but this outing was a little bit more consistent. He kept the ball in the strike zone. He forced Towson to swing the bat. So he's not going to light you up. Fastball around 89 to 92. But, you know, this is a guy who's effective and has proven to be effective at a high level. So if there's a guy to be happy for in college baseball, it's Sam Heifel now that he's back starting on Friday nights.
Yeah, and another guy that we got to touch on, too, that is kind of flying under the radar, but can't now after his 17 strikeout performance. That was Hagen Smith.
Yeah.
Against Oklahoma State. I believe that was on a Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Arkansas tried to lose it for him later in that game, but they ended up winning 5-4. But here's Hagen Smith's line. 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 17 strikeouts. He had faced 22 batters, 17 of those outs. On strikeouts, he threw 78 pitches.
Unbelievable.
And I went back to watch some of the highlights, and some of those were just 3-pitch strikeouts that they had no idea what they were doing up at the plate. At one point, he had 15 outs. 15 of them were strikeouts. Put it mildly, it looked like he was facing some of the teams that I face in my men's league. Like, that's how bad of swings Oregon State was taking. I mean, what? You had 1, 2, four guys with 3+ strikeouts in the game. Arkansas had 23 strikeouts altogether. Now, McIntyre tried to, like I said, tried to give the game away in the seventh and eighth when Oregon State scored two in both innings, but Arkansas ended up scoring the one run in the bottom of the eighth and ended up holding on 5-4. But, I mean, you talk about a guy that was kind of known last year as being a really good arm, but this year has kind of taken a step forward and won a lot of awards this week for what he did and a lot of recognition from a lot of the top guys in the sport for what he did against Oregon State.
He is starting to get talked about as a guy who's got the stuff to be big league ready, like we have been raving about Paul Skeens for the last 10 months. I mean, this kid, especially from the left side, think about how valuable that is to have a guy from the left side with that kind of strikeout repertoire. Has just been fantastic. It's not like he's walking anybody either, you know, especially with a pitch count that low. Just really dominant for an Arkansas team that, you know, has its years when they're really good and years where they're not as good. But they'll be an elite club this year if they got that guy starting on Saturdays.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about his accolades as a sophomore, because he's a junior now, he's draft eligible. Now he's getting talked about as possibly being a top 10 pick if he can continue to do what he's been doing. But a collegiate baseball All-American first team, first team All-American for the NCBWA, which is the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, second team ABCA All-American, second team College Baseball Foundation All-American, a D1 Baseball All-American second team, a Perfect Game All-American second team, Baseball America All-American third team. He was a Golden Spikes Award semifinalist, College Baseball Foundation, National Pitcher of the Year Award semifinalist, all SEC first team. And he also, just for a little added flavor, SEC all defensive team. So, I mean, you talk about a dynamite pitcher. Just looking back last year, 8-2 with a 3.64 ERA. Only made 11 starts. Had 18 games pitched. Was down from the 21-22 season where he made 15 starts. But already 2 starts this year, and just 19 strikeouts in those 2 starts. I mean, you want to talk about dynamite and somebody that can really improve his draft stock this year. I mean, we're talking about Chase Burns and Hartle and all these guys that Wake Forest has and all these guys in the ACC. But Hagan Smith might be saying, "Hey, not so fast. I could potentially be the number one pick in this year's draft."
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. Paul Skeens, you know, before the season started last year, we didn't know what he was going to turn into. He definitely wasn't giving you 1-1 vibes in terms of round one, pick one. But he definitely showed out after. So, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, Travis Bazan or J.J. Weatherholt going into the year. Let's let the year play out a little bit, because there's plenty of guys like Hagan Smith, Chase Burns, Josh Hartle has the year that he had last year. That could easily go 1-1 over some of these other guys that have been talked about in the past.
Yeah, so next start potentially could be tonight if that game doesn't get rained out against Murray State. His real big, I guess his real first test won't come until March 15th when they start when they play Missouri, the start of SEC conference play. He'll pitch at Auburn, I'm sure. LSU at home in Fayetteville, March 28th, towards the end of this month. So opening day for MLB baseball could also be a really big start for Hagan Smith against LSU. That's actually on ESPN2, which is pretty cool. ESPN2 is going to be showing that game on Thursday. He'll play Ole Miss. I'm just kind of going down. I'm expecting him to be the Friday night starter if he's going to continue to pitch like this. So Alabama. Potentially Texas Tech, maybe they'll save him for South Carolina, Florida, all those good guys. I don't need to keep telling everybody who's in the SEC because I'm sure everybody knows. But if he could potentially have 70% of what Paul Skeens did, he can at least be a first-round pick. Maybe in the same spot Rhett Lauder was picked. I believe he was the 10th overall last year to the Reds. Ninth overall. A Dolander was 10th overall.
Yep.
So, I mean, you could see another year where we have a lot of college arms go in the first 10 picks. Because, like I said, Chase Burns and Josh Hartle are going to be vying for that number one pick right now. You got Hagan Smith, Santucci with Duke. So, you can have a lot of college arms. Florida with Caglione is going to be vying for that number one spot, which he was throwing about a billion the other day in his start. So it'll be interesting to see what the race is with the college arms.
Yeah, I am really excited about it. You know, obviously everything gets washed out, but guess what? Tomorrow we get a double dosage of Wake Forest Demon Deacons because you get Josh Hartle starting game one on Saturday, followed by Chase Burns in game two, 45 minutes after. So you want to see some good pitching. I think the rainouts have kind of benefited us. Speaking of rain.
Saturday. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll let you go.
I was going to say, you have on Saturday, you have a little saucy 1 o'clock game, the Frisco College Baseball Classic. You have number 25 Dallas Baptist against number 20 Indiana.
Okay.
That could be a little saucy.
I like that. But speaking of rainouts, you know where it rains a lot? It rains a lot in California. You know who plays in California? UC Santa Barbara. And I think I texted you this the other day. Peter, I'm so glad that they're out of the top 25 because they are the biggest frauds in college baseball. I'm sorry. You can't go into a year ranked in the top 25, spank a team 20-8, and then lose, I think, 4 out of your next 6 games. You just can't do that. So good on the Riders. They're out of the top 25. Good. They stink. I mean, look at how many runs they gave up. They blew a 9-4 lead in the bottom of the ninth inning to Pepperdine on Tuesday and ended up losing 10-9 on a walk-off. They gave up 6 runs in the ninth inning. So, you know, look at all these runs they're giving up. They lose 10-9 to Pepperdine. Obviously, Campbell beat them. Great. Sacramento State. Like, what are we doing? Give up 6 runs to Sacramento State. 7 runs to Campbell, obviously. And so, you know, look, if there's a team that I hate the most in college baseball, and I don't know anything about them, because, you know, well, we do our research, but I wouldn't say I'm a devoted UC Santa Barbara baseball fan. If there's a team that I despise now, it's UC Santa Barbara.
Well, you're going to hate this. According to NCAA.com, well, this is through February 25th, so this hasn't even – this is definitely wrong because it had UC Santa Barbara at 24, but obviously –
it's not updated.
It is.
Not updated.
This is
fraudulent.
Not updated. So
fraudulent.
Let's look at the NCBWA, sportswriter.net. Let's see. Yeah, UC Santa Barbara, not in. And oh no, this is why is it? Why is it giving me 2022?
They're frauds. Fraudulent.
Yeah. Either way. Yeah. Yeah, they're out of the top 25. Trying to find the new top 25 rankings, but I cannot seem to find any of it right now. Here we go. So you got Wake Forest still at number 1, LSU number 2, Arkansas number 3, Oregon State number 4, and Florida rounding out the top 5. So the top 5 has not changed, and this is from 4 days ago. So this is obviously updated. Top Tennessee moves up from 8-7. Virginia moves up from 10-8 after a 4-0 start. They're 7-0 to begin the season. Vanderbilt drops from 9-7 after losing to Dayton and losing 1-3 to Gonzaga.
High Point's got a shot.
High Point has a shot.
High Point
they
plays
just lost
Dayton.
To...
High Point plays Dayton this week.
Who did I just see that High Point lost to? Oh, Tennessee. They just lost 7-4.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good show.
Good loss.
Only
good
losing
loss.
7-4.
Good loss.
Let's see. Duke stays at number 13. Really, everything stays the same. East Carolina lost to Campbell 7-6. That kept them at 15. They were 2-2 last week. Let's see. Texas Tech moves up 1. North Carolina moves down 1. After losing 2-3 to ECU, which, I mean, that was a really good series, so you can't really fault them for losing that series. It's not like they lost to High Point 2-3. Sorry, but, you know.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
Auburn moves up 1. UC Irvine goes from 21-20. Indiana goes from 22-21. Coastal moves up one. Dallas Baptist goes from 25 to 23rd. Alabama goes from not ranked to number 24. And Campbell goes from not ranked to number 25. And this is according to baseballamerica.com. And this was updated February 26th. So that was, what, Monday. So that is the latest poll that I can find. You want to do... Here we go. So we're in the world of gambling, right?
Naturally.
Now we're in the world of gambling. This is updated February 28th. So, what, 2 days ago? Yes. Because it's a leap year. Happy leap year. Don't know if, you know, how you celebrate. So, power rankings. Based on USA Today, Jack McKessie from USA Today. Do you want to guess who the number one team in week two power rankings are, according to this guy and USA Today, to win the World Series, the College World Series? Who would be number one?
Right now.
Right now after week two.
I'm going to go with, I have two names in mind. I'm going with, I'm going to go down to Texas, and I'm going to go with Texas A&M.
Texas and Texas A&M to win the College World Series. Texas A&M is tied for 8th at plus 2,000. Texas is tied for 10th at plus 3,000. Number one, the greatest odds to win the College World Series are Wake Forest at plus 700.
Well, obviously. I mean, I wanted to go off. I thought we were doing based on results year so far.
No, well, yeah, it's based off of 2 weeks so far. LSU is number two at plus 800.
They're not undefeated.
Florida's tied at third at plus 1,000. Arkansas is tied for third at plus 1,000. And then Tennessee rounds out the top five at plus 1,500.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. TCU is above teams like Clemson, Texas, South Carolina. East Carolina and Duke are tied with UCLA at plus 3,500 odds. North Carolina at plus 5,000. NC State tied for 17 at plus 5,000.
Yeah, whatever. Give me College of Charleston at plus 50,000. Call him a day.
So this is according to Jack McKessie. And this was updated February 28th of 2024. So that was Thursday because today is March 1st. Harris, real quick, if I had to ask you to put stock in a team.
Yeah.
Who are you putting that stock in? Are you putting stock in Texas A&M because you think they're going to rise and they're going to really win the World Series? Or are you making the smart decision and putting it in a stock like Apple, which is Wake Forest or LSU?
If I had to put it in a stock, that's a good question. Really good question. I would probably put it in a team like Alabama. There's my stock. I like their pitching. They got a 1.62 ERA to start the year. I love their offense. I think they're motivated. You know, that's a team that if all didn't go awry last year, you know, maybe could have won the Super Regional and made it to a College World Series. I don't know. But I'm going to put my money in Alabama. But I, for the record, I do not bet college baseball. Yeah, that's it. I don't bet college baseball. But for the podcast purposes, Alabama.
So now let me ask you the other question. If you had stock in a team, who are you selling? Because after the first 2 weeks, you're like, I don't really like how this is going, or I don't know. I don't know how they're gonna go in conference play, and they're scaring me a lot.
Great question. The first name that comes to mind, honestly, is NC State. Now, they just won on a walk-off, by the way. Final score of that, 6-5. So they blew a three-run lead to Towson, who's now 1-7. So, well, let's get real with ourselves here. I don't think their pitching's sustainable enough. I don't think their offense is as glitzy as people say that it is. Like Eli Serrano, good bat. Jacob Cozart, obviously, good bat, good glove behind the plate. They're just missing a lot for me to say, okay, like, this is a team that can make a deep run. I'm selling on the pack. That's probably, sadly, but I'm selling on the back.
So now I have a homer answer and I have a non-homer answer. The homer answer is Florida State because they're beating up on everybody, but they also haven't been playing anybody, which leads me to my who I would sell stock in now is LSU. I think I would sell that stock right now just because I don't know what their pitching is going to be like. They lose two really good guys. They lose Dylan Cruz. I know they still have Tommy White, but they lose Trey Morgan, who is not only really good in that lineup, but also really good defensively for them. So, I think they're going to struggle come conference play, especially if Arkansas is going to be really good, if Florida is going to be really good. Tennessee's shown that they can still power guys through. Vanderbilt is kind of iffy this year right now. Alabama, like you said, is really good. South Carolina is really good. I think I would sell stock in them. And then I think who I would buy stock in really is either South Carolina or Texas A&M. I think I like both that. Of them so far this season have pitched really good, and their offenses have been amazing so far. Yeah. And if you talk about one of the better crowds, one of the better atmospheres in college baseball, I think Texas A&M has one of the best traditions where they count the pitchers how many balls they've thrown in a row. So, like, if you throw four in a row, they start yelling, ball four, and then so on and so forth. So,
and A&M's got the best pitching staff in the nation thus far through the first, two, 3 weeks of the year. So, I like those picks. I think LSU's a little young and different, too. So, I like those picks.
I think LSU lost too many guys too soon.
Yeah.
I think if it would have been if Cruz would have been a sophomore, and you just lose Paul Skeens, I feel a little better because Dylan Cruz, if he has the year that he had last year, and then he comes back with with Tommy White, I feel a little better. Or vice versa. If you only lose Cruz, but you bring back your ace and Paul Skeens, and you still have Tommy White, and you lose Trey Morgan and stuff like that, I think you're fine. But to lose those three guys that were, upper echelons of your team and of, the conference and everything and of the country. Also, Florida kind of worries me just a little bit because their pitching staff, they lost Waldrop. They lost Langford, who right now Langford looks like he could be vying for a opening day roster spot with the Texas Rangers, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, who knows? Florida, like the parents, they should have had him later.
But yeah, so I think we were talking about the SEC just a little bit and about how, it is a little fraudulent. I will say, though, that they have some of the best competition. But I think when you and I were talking, it's so top-heavy sometimes. LSU and Vanderbilt have been the two staples of that conference for a long time. I know Florida won a national championship, in 2017?
Yep.
But it's to the point where everybody at the bottom just beats up on everybody. And then the top teams just beat everybody at the bottom. Then it's like, is it really that
good? I
gotta
get good? My charger.
Oh, you gotta get your charger for your laptop. But is it one of those things that is it really that good, or is it just like football where you have Alabama and Georgia? Two teams at the top of the conference every year that just beat the ever loving dog snot out of everybody else. And then, you have a couple of teams at the bottom that beat up on each other and they win, six, seven games. So they're bowl eligible. And then they're in a bowl game and they win their bowl game against a mid-major team. So everybody's like, oh my gosh, the SEC is so good. So I think, as we still wait for Harris to get his laptop charger, I think that's going to be the same thing. But right now you have Arkansas, LSU, and Florida at 2, 3, and 4. Those teams aren't going to stay where they're going to stay for the whole year because Arkansas has to play LSU in Florida. So we're really going to see what Hagan Smith and that Arkansas team is made of. Texas A&M are buying stock in, so I think they're going to be one of the really good teams in the conference. We'll see about Tennessee and Vanderbilt and also Alabama and South Carolina. Auburn right now is also doing well. But like I was saying, Harris, I think it's very much top heavy with a lot of teams that beat up on each other. So that's why they have better records, not only in conference, but also completely. And then at the beginning of the year, you could stockpile a lot of wins. I mean, Florida State, for all that I'm talking about them, is stockpiling wins against Butler, West Carolina, and USF.
Think about how many mid-major teams you could just unload money to say, hey, come to our place so we can kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying about, I don't know if you heard me about the football analogy, but
yeah,
all the teams at the bottom of the SEC beat up on each other. They get six, seven wins, they're bowl eligible. Then they go play UMass or Rutgers, you know, in a bowl game, get their seventh or eighth win, maybe even ninth win. And everybody's like, oh, the SEC went, 12-2 in bowl games, so they're the greatest conference ever. Like, no, they beat up on lesser opponents, not only outside of conference for the first three games or so, but also in conference for the teams that are terrible in conference. And then they go play Rutgers or something like that in a bowl game where they're like, okay, let's just go, beat the snot out of this team and make it a 9-win season. Everybody's like, oh, they're 9-3. They're going to be really good next year. Like, let's pump the brakes just a little bit.
It's just a conference that's historically good and has a lot of money. So if you want NIL, you go.
So I wonder if baseball will get to the point where football is, to where football is going to be basically the NFL version, but in college, where you just have the East and the West. They're going to be playing each other to get into the college football playoffs or whatever they decide to call, the playoffs. So I wonder if baseball will get to that point to where it's basically Big Ten, ACC, SEC are all going to be in one big conference. And then you're going to have the Big 12. The Pac-12 still kind of exists in baseball, not so much for football. I mean, you're going to have UCLA and all of them going to the Big Ten for baseball. But I wonder if it'll get to that point to where it's basically all the Eastern conferences against all the Western conferences. And then you just duke it out to see who makes the college football or the college baseball playoffs, I should say, or the College World Series, which that will then be fun. If you have Auburn, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, Georgia, Florida State, Miami, all of those teams in one big mega conference, then I think that could be a lot of fun. And then we'll really see who's the best of the best.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that. And, just to say, the big dogs, I mean, the last 3 years, the national champion has come out of the SEC. But I like that format. I think I would submit that to the league.
They're supposed to be coming out with the college football video game now.
Yeah.
If they ever come out with the college baseball video game again.
I did want to mention.
Oh.
So, I follow a lot of the Wake Forest media guys. And one of them posted a picture of an advertisement behind home plate at the couch with MLB The Show 24 with like a MLB. I got to pull it up. MLBTheShow.com/college with a date on it. It said 3/19/24. So could we be getting some college baseball players entering MLB The Show based on an advertisement in good old Winston-Salem, North Carolina?
You'll have to send me that.
I'm going to have to find it.
That's interesting, but I'd rather have an actual college baseball game than just have MLB The Show with like the top guys in college in the game.
Yeah.
But
I agree with that. But like you form your dynasty team, and you get Tommy Tanks like on your team. You're telling me you're not putting him at third base? Come on.
Oh, no. Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on who you get. There's Brooks Robinson still in the game, too. Frank Robinson. So maybe you just play Tommy Tanks at the
age. I might have mistaken that. I don't play video games enough to know that Brooks Robinson's still in the game. In fact, I don't play video games at all. So I may have to stay out of this conversation. I just read it. I just read a tweet.
Hey, listen. It's more than... That's more advertisement, though, than we've gotten the last 10 years with the college football game. So
there you go.
So you never played NCAA 06 or 07?
No.
Oh, you're missing out.
No. Do you have apparently a PlayStation 2 or GameCube?
Nope.
You don't.
Nothing.
Haven't owned a gaming system since the 8th grade, good sir.
I don't know how we're friends. I don't know how we're still doing this podcast.
Maybe I just wasn't raised right. Like I said about LSU you still having Skeens and Dylan Cruz, like maybe blame the parents.
You said it, not me.
No,
I didn't
I'm
say
kidding.
Anything about that.
I'm kidding. Mom and Dad, love you. But maybe they're teaching me right. Who knows?
Well, other than that, no other series this week that really brings any attention. Ooh, the Astros Foundation Classic on Sunday, Texas against Vanderbilt. That could be interesting. The team that you thought was number one in the power rankings to win the College World Series. Other than that, you touched on it, South Florida UCF play a series this week. Florida and who do they play this weekend? We just had it.
Miami.
Florida and Miami play a series in Coral Gables this week. So that should be interesting. A couple of Florida rivalries. You know what was really cool that I wish they would bring back? George Steinbrenner Field at one point had hosted, now this is going back to 2012, I don't know how long they've done it afterwards, but they had at the Tampa Yankee spring training site, or now the Tampa Tarpons, it was called the Florida Four Classic. It had USF, Miami, Florida, Florida State in the tournament, in a little round robin, you know, you play one team each day type of deal. And that was a lot of fun. You got to see Florida State versus Florida, and then you got to see USF versus Miami. I wish they would bring that back.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I don't know. Just seeing that Florida and Miami were playing each other, that's what reminded me. But we need more tournaments like that, I think, around the country to where, like with softball, how everybody comes to the Clearwater Invitational now. It's gotten so big the last couple of years. It's really brought a spotlight, you know, to the beginning of the softball season, and it gets sold out and everything. I think you can have that instead of just having small little tournaments where USF is hosting Indiana State, UConn, and Louisville. You can have where they're hosting a lot more teams as well, you know, where you can kind of like grow the game and get somebody down, like get the teams like UConn and Indiana State where they can't play baseball because it's still snowing up there. Get them to Florida, get them to Texas, get them to Southern California, and have like USC or UCLA or Texas A&M host these sites, or have, you know, be host sites for these kind of big preseason tournaments for college baseball. I think it would bring a lot of eyes to the sport and would get people seriously interested in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, look at Hagan Smith. I mean, he had that great performance at Globe Life Field in Arlington. I mean, that's why I was watching it, because it was at Globe Life Field. LSU's playing at the Juice Box this weekend, where the Houston Astros played Minute Maid Park. So, yeah, I agree. Get them in the bigger facilities. You know, obviously you're not going to sell out a 50,000-seat stadium during the regular season, but still, like, it creates an amazing environment, and the kids obviously love it.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody's in spring training, so if you play in Texas and Southern California, maybe not so much in Florida, just because, you know, everybody's using the spring training sites in Florida, but you can then get, you can have, you know, have Florida hosted, have FSU hosted, USF, Miami, whatever, host one of these, you know, preseason tournaments. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Because, I mean, they already called it the USF tournament.
Yeah.
It's like, just bring, instead of having three other teams, bring eight other teams and just have a really big round robin and just have every team play each other once and, you know, get a lot of eyeballs on it.
I agree. I'm right there with you.
So, Harris, I think that'll do it for this episode, unless you got anything else to add that we should be watching for.
I'm going to throw in a young lad of the week, because obviously Drew Burris seems to be the universal young lad of the week. But me and my buddy from High Point, so shout out to Sam Zajacek, former High Point Panther legend. We were talking about one of our pals who played for High Point transferred to Delaware and has just become an absolute stud. And just a name to look out for on the draft board, maybe late in the draft this upcoming year. But we're talking about a kid, Andrew Amato, who started off the year so far. He's batting 400 to start the year. He went 3-for-3 this past Saturday in a win against Jacksonville with 2 homers and 6 RBIs. He's got 10 RBIs through his first 6 games of the year. So 2 homers, 6 ribbies. It's not 4 homers, but for a kid who barely got any playing time at a Big South conference to go to a CAA conference, which Delaware I think is middle of the pack there right now, very happy with the kid and glad he's showing out. He's turned into quite a bit of a stud for that team. So a little mid-major madness over there. There's my young lad of the week for you, Andy Amato. Shout out to you, pal. Yeah.
I think Hagan's missed my young lad of the week. I'm a pitcher. Pitchers get more love from me than other guys. Drew Burris, I mean, obviously co-young lad of the week, I guess you can say, for both of us. But Hagan Smith, 17 strikeouts in 6 innings is unheard of, you know, in college baseball right now. And to do it in only 78 pitches, I mean, that's – you want to talk about efficient. Like, that's efficient. So, young lad of the week, Hagan Smith. Probably see him again this Friday against Murray State. Or that would be today, actually. Or depending on when you're listening to it, he already probably pitched in through 20 strikeout game. I don't know. Who knows? But – Harris, that is going to do it for us on episode 32 of the Young Lads Podcast. Thank you all for joining us. As always, bring back NCAA baseball, please, if you're bringing back college football, which I can't wait to play that this summer. Harris, I'm going to have to
If PlayStation's listening, I'll get him a gaming system, and then I'll play if you bring back college baseball, the show, or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're going to have to – if you ever come down to Florida, we're definitely going to have to play some college football.
I'm on it.
That's a must. But
I'm on it.
For Harris Eisenberg, I am Peter DeFee Jr. saying so long, good night. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.